Yo, I decided to go with a little more subdued yo today. Everybody, welcome to another episode of the Where It Went podcast. Jason, what number is this? 78?
79.
79.
Released in 1999.
What is it?
The Willhaven LP, WHVN.
Lots to unpack here, but before we do that, we have anything that we need to...
And by the time this airs, I will have already seen what is to be the show of the year. April 6th in Baltimore. Our very own Jason and his rock ensemble, Cloak Dagger, are playing with Swami John Reese.
Yeah, Swami in the Bed of Nails.
Yeah, of Rock from the Crypt, Pitchfork, Drive Like Jehu, Night Marchers, Hot Snakes fame.
Hey,
do
you have the warm milk on deck already?
Oh, we need it. I'll need to have it on tap.
Maybe no warm milk before you go on stage, actually.
Yeah, exactly.
Maybe just some liquid death.
I'll show up with a thermos full of warm milk that he can maybe after. But so, yeah, by the time this airs, that'll have already happened. So,
and it will already have been your birthday. So I'll say that for future episode, happy belated birthday. But for now,
thank you.
Happy birthday.
Yeah, thank you.
But I do want to shout out, and I'm sure Hav will appreciate, the newest Antimatter interview was with our good friend, Brian McTernan, friend of the pod. It'll be, 2 or 3 weeks away from now, but every interview is worth checking out on Antimatter, and especially the interview with Brian, I very much enjoyed.
Yeah, you know, as I've said before, I only listened to these interviews because I love the soothing AI woman voice. But the past couple times I've listened, some of the stuff that she says is rough. Like instead of saying 108, she always says 108.
Yes.
And VIC instead of Vic gets a little weird. But the Brian McTernan episode was great to listen to. I listened to it last night and I really appreciated it. I actually was going to text Brian and tell him that I appreciated him. But I'll just do it here. So, Brian, if you're listening, we all appreciate you.
Brian, we love you. I'm excited. I'll get to see Be Well again in June.
Every time Be Well has played here, I've been like out of town or something's happening and I haven't been able to see them or hang with Brian. So I'm hoping this summer maybe they come back and I've finally get to
Do they have catch. The dates with I Am the Avalanche? Are there any out there or no?
I don't know. I haven't seen that.
They're out there. The dates are out there, but I haven't seen if I don't know.
I'll look
what,
right now.
Is that a Vinnie Caruna band?
It is.
Uh-huh. Vinnie Caruna. Shout out Vinnie
Bit
Caruna.
Bit of bow to Bit him. Bow. Yeah. I'm excited to get to that movie album.
Hey, you know, I just remembered someone else that I need to give a bit of bow to, and that is John Pettibone. I get a few texts here and there from people about our episodes. Of course, Tyler from the Life and Death Brigade texts me all the time. Brooklyn texts me here and there when he's not jocking the newest Britpop shoegaze core album that I won't listen to. But John Pettibone, man, he is just a solid listener and a solid dude. And I cannot wait to talk about one of my top five favorite Rev releases with him, Himsa, Death is Infinite.
I always forget that he's on one of the ones on Rev. Because yeah. I actually had one of the ones on, were they on Prosthetic? Like,
yeah.
When the music was like a little more
real
like
metal,
Swedish
real
metal.
Uh-huh.
It was good though, because it was his voice over that stuff.
Yeah.
Two things. You reminded me, speaking of, sometimes you forget that, you know, maybe we talked to people a long time ago.
Sure.
But they're still loyal listeners. So I wanted to give a shout out to Mark Starr and Jeremy Chatelon. I hit those guys up when I found that picture of Pete Wentz with the Insight shirt. And Mark had mentioned, actually, he's like, hey, I still listen to every episode. And they were one of the first, you know, people that we talked to for this, that kind of opened the door. So much love to those guys. Hav, there is a Los Angeles date of this jaunt with I Am the Avalanche.
Mm-hmm.
There's Santa Ana.
Santa Ana. San Diego. That's about 20 minutes from my house. So,
and that's on May 18th. There's a San Diego the day before and Los Angeles on May 19th.
So all right, then. Well, Brian McTernan, Vinny Caruna, if either of you are listening to this, hey, let's get a fucking burrito or a coffee. Because I asked Norm when Thursday just played here in Santa Ana, and I asked him to get some coffee, and he was too busy for me. So hopefully Brian McTernan is not too busy for me to grab a fucking coffee. You know what I mean? Norm. Anyway, anything else? Or is it time to?
Antimatter, more like anti-hanger.
More like anti-Hov. Norm kidding. Loves me. Anyway, I think that it's now time to
kick it. Can I kick it?
Kick it! Kick it!
Hey, we're Will Hale. Thanks
So we are here today to talk Revelation 79. So we're almost out of the 70s. We're in the year 1999. And the record is Will Haven, WHVN. Do you guys refer to it as self-titled?
No, we say WHVN.
Okay.
Yeah.
And came out in 99. So before we dive in, we were talking before we started recording, there is another Will Haven record on Rev Proper, but you are one of the bands, not the first, and to my knowledge, you're not the last, that did start on Crisis, which, as we know, was a subsidiary of Rev that was initially started, I think, by Walter, right? It was something like that, and then it quickly got taken over by, probably by the time you guys were on, was it Rob Moran?
Yeah, Rob's the one who signed us. Yeah, correct.
Okay. So honestly, Will Haven, we've had a couple, but they're a band that there's not, I feel like some of these episodes we do, and it's like the history's known and it's all over the place. And I mean, you guys got a wiki page and you're still playing and stuff. But if you want to maybe start just by like, the band started 1995, Sacramento, right?
Correct. Uh-huh.
State capital. And it says here too, one of the things that caught my eye, out of the ashes of, a band called Sock with Sean Lopez of Far, who I love Far. So I guess if you could just talk a little bit about the start of the group and then getting that, El Diablo record on Crisis.
Yeah, so we started in 95. Well, Sock had formed in 93. And it was me playing drums, Sean Lopez playing guitar. Grady was singing. And then our friend Adam was playing bass. And we did a demo and we shopped it around. And then we did a few shows. And it was picking up some steam. And then right when Sock started kind of getting, you know, it's a little bit of momentum, Far got signed to Sony Epic, so Sean had to, of course, take off of Far. So it's kind of left us with no guitar player. So we scrambled trying to find another guitar player, didn't find anybody. So I sold my drum set, bought a guitar, and basically said, I'm going to start my own band. And that's how Will Haven kind of began. Me and Grady kind of just had this idea of just keep going with me playing guitar instead. So, and then I got my friend Mike to play bass, and I got my friend Wayne to play drums. And so Will Haven was just kind of born out of just that. And then we just started
getting signed to Epic, basically created Will Haven.
Basically, yeah, pretty much. Yeah. Yeah. Sean was got pretty busy, of course. And then you know, we tried to replace Sean, but you know, Sean's one of a kind. So it was really hard to replace Sean. And I figured I always kind of wanted to play guitar a little bit. So I thought this was my opportunity to play guitar. So I just started kind of writing songs in my room and, you know, I didn't really think much of it really, just kind of, you know, wanted to just do something different. Cause you know, I lived with Sean for like 10 years. And so I knew the Far guys really well. And I grew up with the Deftones guys. And so I started Wilhaven. I didn't want to sound like any of those guys. I just wanted to kind of create my own little music thing. And so it was just basically for fun. And then, of course, knowing the right people, you know, we knew the Deftones guys, the Far guys really well. And then our friend, Troy Davis, who I managed Far at the time and also managed, I think, Strife and Snapcase at one point, he kind of took us under his wing and paid for our first really EP that we recorded. And then he got us a couple shows at the Showcase Theater in LA. We played the California Takeover show with Earth Crisis and Snapcase. And then we just kind of played a few LA shows and we recorded the EP. And then out of nowhere, Troy called me and said, hey, Revelation might give you a call. They're interested in maybe signing you guys. And I was blown away because, you know, Revelation was a huge part of my life when I started Wilhaven, even before Wilhaven. You know, my favorite bands like Inside Out and Youth of Today and Gorilla Biscuits. And, you know, that was my thing. So when I got a call from Troy saying they might call us, I was kind of freaking out. You know, it's kind of like equivalent to Far getting signed to Sony. It was like, oh, we're getting signed to Revelation. That's like huge for us, you know?
Absolutely. So, yeah.
So, yeah, I was stoked. And then, you know, Rob called me and basically said, you know, I've heard good things and I've heard some of your songs. And I like them. And he told me about Crisis kind of being a new startup thing for Revelation and how he was kind of just kind of looking for bands. And so he approached Jordan and Jordan okayed off on it. And then what was really cool about it, though, is when we did get signed to Crisis, we kind of made a deal with Jordan if we could put the Revelation logo on the EP. And he was okay with that because we were going to do the next record on Revelation. Or do the next thing on Crisis. He was cool with that. So we put the Rev sticker on our first EP. And then, so we just, and ever since then, we had a great relationship with Jordan. And then Rob ended up leaving, but we still kept a close relationship with Jordan. And yeah, it was kind of a dream come true at the time, you know, getting signed to Revelation. And we'd only been a band for maybe the year or so, maybe before we got signed. So yeah, it was crazy.
So one of the questions that people had asked, like when we put feelers out, was like, and you seem like you'd be the person to answer, would be how involved in like the hardcore scene were guys like in the Deftones and Far? Because I know I always like, so Deftones were such a weird band, right? Because they were, as you know, lumped in with your Korn and your Limp Bizkit. So of course, when I first heard of the band, you know, I think Adrenaline was like, what, 95? I was 14 and I was just like, it wasn't even on my radar. And then I think by the time of the second record, and I remembered somebody being like, no, man, you got to listen to this band. And it's like, oh, and then of course I became a fan ever since then. And always could tell, like, you can kind of tell like, okay, these guys, they know what's up. Like they listen to, you know, good shit. And I know Chino, I've seen like, he guessed on the Strife record and stuff, but I was just kind of, people were wondering, cause I do always, you know, your band is associated with them a lot with guest spots and same thing with Far.
Yeah. One thing about, I mean, we're definitely a tight group. We all grew up together even before these bands kind of blew up. So we inspired each other and we learned music from each other. But my hardcore roots, like the Youth of the Day, Gorilla Biscuits, stuff like that, came from Sean Lopez. He was really deep into that. And in fact, his first band, Inner Strength, was Victory Records' first release. And he sang for that band. So
that's right.
Yeah. So he's been around the scene for a long time. He got me into all that stuff. My friend Jeff Jaworski, who sang for William for a short period of time, he was really into that too. More to the crust punk stuff. So that was my hardcore roots was from Sean. And then the Deftones guys were more into like, you know, Bad Brains and like, they had a very big eclectic music thing they were pulling from. My Chino's was really into Duran Duran and the Smiths and, you know, Bad Brains, and but they all love Faith No More. So Deftones were pulling from a whole bunch of different genres. Not they weren't so stuck in the hardcore scene, even though they liked the hardcore scene, but it wasn't a big thing like it was for me and Sean and Grady at the time. But Deftones are definitely a punk rock version of, you know, of that rock scene that they were kind of lumped into. They're definitely the more punk rock of like the Korn, Limp Bizkit, for sure. They're Martin. And they definitely have a hardcore root to them for sure.
Yeah. Like you know, again, now at this point, been a fan for over 25 years or whatever. And it's like, I mean, not to be despair, you can't even put them in the same league as those other bands.
No, they're not. No, not at all.
They're their own thing. So exactly. Did you guys, at least it seems like you knew that it was going to be Crisis, because I've heard stories where some of the bands thought it was going to be Rev, and then it's like, oh, we're on Crisis, and they're kind of like a little bit of like the wind taken out from under their sails. But it sounds like you guys talked to Rob, and I mean, Crisis had a lot of cool stuff, the Far Side 7-inch, you know, your stuff, the Shai Hulud stuff that ended up being really popular.
It was a cool family they had. Like, we actually toured with a few of like Shai Hulud. We did some shows with them, became friends with those guys. Beta Minus Mechanic, we did some shows with them in LA. Like, it was when we got on the label, it was very small, and there was only like a few, like probably like four bands at the most on the label at the time. So it felt very like family oriented being on Crisis instead of being in this huge Rev like machine. But I don't think we were bummed at all. I think we were still a band, like a very young band, and just like, I think just surprised if somebody actually wanted to sign us. You know? So,
and I think that's the best attitude to have, because yeah, not every band gets to have somebody say like, I'm going to do your record. And to get still we know now as a kid, we know now too, like distribution is half the battle, right? So it's like, it's distributed by the same, you know, the same people, you know, distributed by Rev. So they're carrying it, they're able to sell it, and kind of gives you a chance to get your bearings before then. Of course, you did go on to be on Rev proper with the follow-up. How did that end up happening, where it was like, okay, did the El Diablo sell pretty well, and they were just like, you know what, welcome to Rev?
Yeah, I think we were all surprised. You know, the EP was we sold through, I think, just the catalog, and then we did El Diablo and Crisis, and with no expectations from either of us, really. The big thing was Rob, like hanging out with Rob. When we got to meet Rob and hang out with him, and he was such a cool dude, and like he took us out to dinner, and we just had a great time with him. And he was kind of our main dude. So when we started writing or recording El Diablo, there was no expectations on either side, you know. And then we put out the record, and it started getting a little bit of traction through magazines and stuff. And then, I mean, out of nowhere, Chino called me and said, hey, you guys want to go on a world tour with us for like 4 months? And El Diablo had just come out. And I was like, yep, let's go. So I called Jordan. I was like, hey, we're going to go on tour with Deftones for like 4 months, you know, like. And he's like, awesome. So, and that tour definitely put Will Haven kind of on the map. You know, we were in Kerrang! Magazine then, and Metal Hammer, and all these magazines. So it got a lot of a push. And then I think that's when Jordan's like, okay, let's kind of make the next record needs to be on something a little bit, you know, with a star on or whatever. Because, you know, we were getting such a lot of publicity in the magazines. I think that Rev was like, okay, let's.
Oh yeah, remember it as yeah, somebody who was like, you know, it was a big deal. Like, oh my God, these guys are touring. Cause that was probably around the time when I actually finally started paying attention to the Deftones.
Yeah.
Cause it would have been like 98 or 97.
Yeah. 98 was 97 was the beginning of it. Yeah. So yeah, I think it was just helping everybody out, you know, it's being out there, and then Rev having the Rev logo on there on all of the ads and stuff was really cool. So we kind of helped out each other in a little way.
And we're at an interesting part in the Rev catalog too, because it's like the record before yours was Judas Factor, which, you know, kind of fits in, I think, with you guys a bit, right?
Yeah.
And the before that was the Kill Holiday, speaking of Rob. I mean, Rob wasn't on that record. And by the way, we at this podcast are huge Rob fans. We love Rob. He's incredible. But yeah, Kill Holiday. And then the record after yours is In My Eyes, second album. And then it was like, so it was like an interesting time because we had the 90s stuff. And then Rev kind of went, there was a few more like the back to basics kind of, not back to basics, like the Rick to Life label, but like back to basics, you know, non-metallic, straightforward hardcore. But then there's a Kiss It Goodbye 7.
I was going to say the Kiss It Goodbye record, yeah.
And then I think like Garrison, like it's all over the map at this point, which I love. Like that's one of the reasons if every record sounded like Break Down the Walls, you know, 79 of them, you'd be pretty bored. So
yeah, exactly. Yeah.
It's cool. But I did see, which I haven't, we haven't seen thus far, it's not considered a split label release. And that this is also for the follow-up. You have a catalog number, but it's also released via a label called Music for Nations, which I've seen a lot of metal stuff on. Like I have some records like Paradise Lost and stuff like that that I see is on that label. Was that a thing for the UK, I guess?
Yeah, that. So on the Deftones tour, on the Round the Fur tour, we were killing it. You know, we were playing awesome shows and, you know, the buzz just got really big around that tour and people started approaching us because they knew we didn't really have a lot. We didn't have a manager. We didn't have anything. We were just kind of out there just on our own. And we got approached by an agent, a pretty big agent over there at the time. And then we kind of signed with him and then Music for Nate there. He knew Music for Nations and Andy Black. And approached him and said, hey, there's this band from America. They're, you know, they've obviously got a great following in the UK now and stuff after the Deftones tour. You guys should like maybe consider doing a licensing deal with Revelation, kind of help them out over here. And so they talked to Jordan and they worked out a licensing deal with Jordan, which I love Jordan for because, I mean, there's no reason he could have or should have done it, you know, because he did take a cut from it, obviously. Like, you know, us signing with another label in England, because that was basically our biggest market at the time was England and France and stuff like that. So for Jordan to do that, I think that was so awesome of him. And so, yeah, Music for Nations was kind of like our home in Europe. And then Rev was in America. And I will say now, I mean, we had the best of both worlds. I mean, having Jordan on this side, but then Music for Nations was probably the best run label I've ever worked with or been around in my life. Like they were amazing, and they, you know, they took care of like Tool's back catalog and Metallica, and so they had a lot of pool, great PR people. I mean, they did so much for us over there, and they helped build the Willhaven brand big time over there. So we wouldn't be here without them, you know.
I'm looking and they have the UK version of the record has the Rev Star still, but it says, because it says Music for Nations under license from Revelation, which, yeah, I've never seen that before on we've seen it on the split label releases and like on the, there's a couple Rev catalog numbers, like the Quicksand second album and Into Another Seamless, where Rev did the vinyl exclusively. So it has a catalog number, but yeah, this is the first time there was like an overseas license. Kind of cool. And I'm looking at Discogs. I'm like, yeah, Music for Nation. I mean, it's huge, the stuff. I have, like I said, the like Paradise Lost and some like Candle Mass, like that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I think Cradle of Filth was on there at one point.
Yeah.
They had a great, great lineup, but that label was amazing. I think they were run by, funded by BMI, I believe, at the time. So they had some money. Yeah, they had some cash on them and they were able to like do a lot of promotion and. Yeah, they were amazing. And I, like I said, I can't thank Jordan enough for giving us that opportunity to work with them and kind of splitting it, you know, two different ways. And yeah, we got blessed for sure.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, that's great. And then like talking about the recording. So actually someone asked this question, because I was going to talk about the writing and the recording of the album. Someone asked about your guitar, what kind of picks you use, Now, I don't know if it's changed now from what you, you know, because a lot of the guitar players, they stick with something through thick and thin. But someone to know what picks you use, and then what gauge or string brand do you use when you're playing in drop B?
Strings have changed a little bit. Picks, I've always used the Clayton, the bigger triangle one. I don't know if I want to hear or not. And they're 80 gauge or whatever that thing is. They're 80s, but they're the bigger triangle Clayton with the eagle on it. I've been playing those forever. I just like the bigger picks because they're just easier for me to hold. A lot of bass players use those picks, but I use it on my guitar. I love them. Let's see. For now, my B tuning, I think I'm using 11 or 12s right now. I've tried a couple different ones. I think 12s were just a little too thick for me. I think I started using the 11s, which I think is like a 56 top string gauge. In fact, I don't know. Let me see.
And questions like this are always funny because there's like 50% of people are going to have no idea what we're talking about.
Yeah,
and
right.
And the other 50% are like nodding their head or salivating, like loving this kind of talk. You know, it's always funny when any kind of like gear talk. But I found that question interesting because now do you use all different tunings for Wilhaven, or is everything in a drop tuning?
No, it's all different. Like El Diablo is in drop D. Every record's been different. We have drop B on some El Diablo, some on Fresno. And then we just got crazy after that. We went to A sharp, we went to F sharp, now we're in G sharp. So it was kind of a stupid thing for me to do because now we go on tour, I have to bring like five guitars.
That's gonna be my question. Like you have to have the whole rack of guitars.
That's now I think about like, why did I do that? But at the time it was more just to first spark some new inspiration and try something new, which has always been something I love to do. But now going back and playing it live, what did I do that for?
So on this record, what tuning were you playing in? Drop D was El Diablo, you said.
Yeah, so drop D, El Diablo. We do have two songs that were drop B on El Diablo. WHVN was still D and drop B on some stuff. And then let's see, well, Carpe Diem was all drop B, I believe.
Okay.
And then after that, I think we started doing more F. I think Vordire was F sharp. Muerte was A. And then our newest record was G sharp.
I'm fascinated because you said you started as a drummer and then you got a guitar. And did you basically like teach I know we're kind of hopping around, but I'm all the guitar talk. Did you like just teach yourself guitar?
Yeah. I mean, my dad played guitar when I was young. So that's kind of why I wanted a drum set when I was like a kid, because my dad played guitar and I was like, well, give me a drum set and we'll start a band together.
Right.
Me and my dad. I watched my dad play guitar, but it really didn't hit me until I moved in with Sean or became friends with Sean. Watching him play guitar and like in Far and some of his earlier bands and stuff, I just loved how he played guitar, and I love watching him play guitar, and I always thought it was just a cool instrument. And then becoming good friends with Stefan from Deftones, like watching him play guitar, and I was fascinated by those two because they weren't your typical guitar player. They weren't doing solos, they weren't doing leads, they were just playing songs. And I love that. I love that about that aspect of them, just not trying to show off, just be the kind of foundation of a song. And so I was like, I think I can probably write a song without having to do solos or be technical or anything. So I just kind of watched Sean and Stefan really closely and then just kind of took what my dad had kind of showed me when I was a kid. And basically, yeah, I just taught myself and just kind of, I wasn't worried about how I play guitar. I was just worried about what it sounded like when I played it. And so
Can you read music?
No, not at all. No, I don't even know notes. Yeah. I mean, I know notes because I can tune my guitar on the tuner. But that's it.
That's where it ends. Like,
yeah,
it is funny because both Stefan and Sean are in bands where I can speak to Far. They're not an active band, but they were the only guitar player. I saw Far, I saw Deftones, Only guitar player. They didn't have some guy, you know, standing in the background behind a curtain. But you're right. Like, they weren't like Eddie Van Halen.
Yeah.
But it's like the way they play, it creates this atmosphere.
Which was different at the time, because when they started coming up, you had the grunge era, you know, and I mean, I guess Nirvana didn't do it so much, but yeah, like Pearl Jam were still doing like solos and Soundgarden and stuff like that. But and even Faith No More had their solos in their songs, but Deftones and Far, just they were not doing that at all. It was just straight writing riffs and a chorus, and like, so that's what I loved about it, you know. It was more just straight to the point, writing great songs, and then that's about it. And it's like, I think I can build off that. So yeah, it was just basically just watching them, basically.
So you go into the studio with Eric
Stenman.
Pronounce the name right. Yeah, Stenman.
Yeah.
Had you recorded with him? Was the previous stuff done with him as well?
Yeah, we did. We did a demo with. Well, we did the sock demo with him. Me and Sean did the sock record with him, and then Eric did our demo tape, and then he did our EP. And so it's kind of a no-brainer, like, okay, well, we know Stenman really well, and he's an amazing musician, great producer. So it was just kind of like, who else we want to do it with? There's no one else. So went in there and did it with Eric, and it was a blast. We had fun. We're great, good friends with Eric. And but what was cool is, like, he let us try stuff, you know, and I think that's why El Diablo is so different. You know, we got to do crazy sounds and work with different things, and he was open to anything, you know. I think we didn't have a sound yet, so he was just basically like whatever you guys want to do, you know, just, you know, this is your first record, so let's just go crazy, you know. There's no expectations, no one's expecting you to sound like a certain way. So yeah, he let us kind of just do what we wanted. And at first I didn't know if he liked it or not, but then after the second song, he's like, I kind of like this stuff, this is pretty good. So then we felt better about ourselves. But yeah, Eric's awesome. I love Eric.
And then it was probably for going in on this record, WHVN, you probably were much more comfortable, I'm assuming, at this point. And then I'd also assume bigger budget, maybe some more time.
That was yeah, it was weird because we had just come off the Deftones tour. And then they took off again to do another tour. And Chino let us move into their practice space here in Sacramento while they were gone. So I wrote WHVN in their practice space. And I didn't know. I mean, so I had a lot of time. I wasn't, you know, stuck at home. So we got to rehearse and jam on stuff. But like, I was kind of lost. I didn't know what to do after El Diablo. You know, I didn't want to make another El Diablo, but I didn't want to. You know, I was influenced by like bands like Coalesce and stuff like that. And so, because we listened to that Coalesce record pretty much that whole Deftones tour. So,
one would that have been?
Give 'em Rope.
Give 'em Rope, yeah.
Yeah. Or, so, like, I was like, I want to make a record like this. And so, but I don't want to rip them off either. I'm not that type of guy. So I was really influenced by them and like Converge and stuff. So, It was one of those weird times where I just came off El Diablo, wanted to do something very different and experimental at the same time. So, so being locked in the Deftones warehouse just by myself, just writing riffs and just trying to figure stuff out. And then I got to the point where, like, you know what, I just want to go record a record. And so it was one of those things where I probably could have put way more time into it, but I didn't know what direction I was going. I didn't have a perceived like thing when going into it, what I wanted to sound like. I was just kind of an open door. So I just wrote some songs and then I was like, let's go record them and see how they turn out, you know? And so I loved WHVN. I just think it wasn't as honed in as El Diablo was, because, you know, El Diablo, I just didn't really have any expectations. With WHVN just coming off a huge tour and getting some, like, a little bit of notoriety, it's like, all right, we got to make a good record, but I don't want to make a commercial record either, you know.
Right.
I want to do something different. So,
so you literally lived up to that age-old stereotype of, like, you have your lifetime to write the first record and then, like, 6 months to write the next.
Yeah. I didn't care if people liked it or not. It was for me just personally, like, all right, what do I want to put out next? And, you know, there was a little bit of, like, what's William going to sound like on the next record? And so, but I was like, that kind of made me excited. Like, I want to do something different than El Diablo. And that's, I think WHVN is definitely that, you know? So, which I think is really cool. Been a lot of people love that record. And I love that because I think it is different than El Diablo. And people are like, yeah, it's more riffy. It's more this, it's more ambient. It's got, you know, it's not so droney like El Diablo was. So, I love the way it turned out, but I didn't writing it. I had no idea what it was going to do.
How old were you guys at this point?
So we did the Deftones tour when I was 23.
That's wild.
And then, so it would have been right around 24, 25, I started writing WHVN.
Okay. So yeah, young guys. Cause
one of the things
that somebody else brought up is, and I feel like you kind of touched on it, was why these songs aren't in your current sets, or at least not many of them. If do you not play anything from this now, or is there just like one or two?
We play Fresno quite a bit. If She Could Speak, we play quite a bit. We play Jaworski a few times on tour. We sprinkle stuff here and there, but I would say probably. Well, now that we have 7 records.
That's what I was going to say.
I have to weed out some of them, but Fresno's pretty much a staple in a lot of our sets. But, you know, we play the new record a lot more now. But yeah, there's some songs we still play off WHVN.
And this was also mixed by Andy Sneap, who, you know, anybody that knows metal has seen his name over, you know, on so many records, both as a producer and I think just a mixer. Like I think if I recall, I think the first time I noticed his name, the other guys on the pod that make fun, I'm like a nerd with production, like like I'm always like, I was a person always paying attention to that stuff just because you know, if I'd hear something I like and it's kind of like it would inform me to maybe, you know, check something else out or whatever. But I think he did the Earth Crisis Breed the Killers, if I'm not mistaken. How did you guys hook up with him?
That was Music for Nations. That's the power of the having like a fairly bigger label where they were able to spend some money. And I think we had mixed it with Eric and they wanted a little bit fuller production, I think, out of it because they were spending a lot of money on this thing. So they called up Andy and asked him to remix it for us and then master it. And so... So yeah, that was all Music for Nations. And I was stoked to like work with Andy. Like that's kind of a big deal when you're in a metal band at that time. It's like, well, Andy's mixing your record. That's a big deal. So that was awesome.
Was Eric upset at all about it getting remixed? You know, like I know sometimes it can be a touchy subject, but sometimes I think even the person that produced it is just kind of like, you know what, my ears need a rest. Why don't we have somebody else, you know, take the reins?
Yeah. And I don't think Eric really, it didn't bother him at all. I think he was kind of curious. He's always one of those guys that's curious to see what somebody else would do with it, you know? And I think somebody like Andy too, he's like, oh yeah, it's like, I'd love to see what Andy does with this. Cause you know, sometimes you're in a studio for a month or two, things kind of get dulled down. You kind of like lose your ear a little bit, you know? And so it's always nice to have like a fresh pair of ears to go and, because a lot of bands don't have their engineer mix it. Sometimes they'll send it to, you know, Andy Wallace or something like that to do it. You know, somebody has a fresh set of ears who has been working on it for 4 months, you know? So, but Eric is a very polished, producer, and a little bit of a punk rock edge to it, which I always loved about Eric, you know? So when Music for Nations got there, probably thought it maybe was a little too edgy for him. And so they wanted to probably make it more commercialized, I guess.
Spit shine, you know? It a little bit.
Yeah, that was kind of, I think that was their thing. It's like with BMI and all their major label stuff, I think they were just like, all right, let's try to make this a more commercial record, basically. So that's kind of what it was. It's all politics.
So, of course. And it's, you know, it's still the same way.
Oh, totally.
What made you decide on the title of the album?
You know what? That's a great question. I think it came from because the songs on the record were just kind of diverse and, you know, we had some heavy stuff, some slower stuff, some ambient stuff. Then we had a punk rock song on there. To me, it was just like, it felt like it was a radio station just playing different songs. That was kind of what came through my brain a little bit, like, okay, this sounds like not a normal record. It kind of sounds like just a bunch of different songs. So I was like, well, let me just like play that theme a little bit with the radio station. And then I think just the WHVN call letters was perfect, you know, like a radio station call letter. And then our friend Jeff Gross, who did the art for El Diablo, we just told him about the idea about kind of being a radio station type theme. And so that's when he came up with the artwork with the radio on the front and the kind of stitching in it and stuff like that. And if you notice, the clock actually says 666 on it, which is something he did.
I'm looking now and I see also that Jeff Cottle, who you know, we've talked to, especially me, talked to many times. He was like the in-house, I think, designer at that point.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So it looks like he worked on it as well. It says, yes. Jason Upright.
Oh yeah. Jason. Yeah. Yeah.
Who I think also worked, I think he was like worked at Rev at that point.
Yeah. Yeah.
And let's see. And Jeff Gross also did the needle work.
Yeah. He went like sewed the sewing in the middle. Yeah.
Yeah. That's cool.
Yeah. He did a great job on it. It's really cool design, cool artwork.
And it looks like Eric wrote a track on here, subtitles.
Yeah, he did a remix of one of our songs.
And okay, so I'm looking too at your tour mates. I'm looking in the thanks list. You got Deftones, Far. You really do kind of run the gamut of like it's like Deftones, Far, Vision of Disorder, Hatebreed, Tora Satana, I'm not familiar, Fury of Five, Day in the Life, Limp Bizkit, and Psycore. That is quite the
yeah.
Is that all from the Deftones tour pretty much?
Well, those are all bands we toured with. So I mean, we did the Deftones tours, it was huge, but then after that we did a tour with Hatebreed, we did a tour with Vision Disorder. Fury of Five was on that tour with us, Vision Disorder. We did some stuff Far. So those were all bands we just went on the road with and became really good friends with. And you know, helped kind of shape Willhaven in a lot of ways, you know, like learning from Hatebreed and Vision Disorder. And you know, like we grew up with Deftones and Far, but like meeting new bands that were in that genre that are just super cool dudes and like are kind of in the same boat we were, because touring with Deftones, they're on another level. But when you're touring with Vision Disorder and Hatebreed, they were kind of like on our level, just playing small clubs, you know, trying to make some money, just try to get to the next show. So we really bonded with those bands, and there's a cool kinship with those guys.
That makes sense too, because like at that point, Hatebreed was still with Victory. They were playing big shows. Usually they would headline, like you said, smaller clubs, pack them, but then they would be opening. Like I saw them open for, you know, Soulfly, Danzig. Like they would kind of also run the whole spectrum.
Yeah, they were kind of the same boat we were. Yeah.
So yeah, I don't think it can be overstated actually the importance of Hatebreed at that era of like what they were doing for touring bands.
Well, yeah, they were. I mean, Jamie's so awesome. I love Jamie. Actually, I saw him at Furnace Fest last year, and like I hadn't seen him in years, and it's almost like we had never not seen each other. And like he's just so cool. He's such a rad dude. And he back then he was busting his ass, you know, like selling shirts and merchandise and selling other people's merchandise on tour, and just like, you know, he's an awesome dude. But it's funny because now I look back on it and that band has been such a huge influence on what's going on right now. Like
absolutely
Knock Loose, Sumac, all these bands, they're straight Hatebreed, you know, but those kids don't know who Hatebreed are. They know who Knock Loose is. So, but if you go back, that's basically what Hatebreed was doing, you know, what, 20 years ago, 25 years ago. So it's crazy to see that that band's had such a big influence on what we are and today with hardcore and metal.
Jason, that usually is on the pod with us, he'll be stoked to hear, because we've had these discussions about Hatebreed as people are wont to do, right? Like, you know, when you have those discussions, but they definitely had a really wide influence. And like you said, like it's still felt today.
Yeah. I mean, if you go on Spotify, like all those new bands coming down, they all sound like Hatebreed. I'm like, wow, this is crazy. Like, you know, like that band is like, I don't know if it's coincidence or whatever, but it's I mean, it's there, you know, you can tell.
Well, they pounded sounds like you guys, they pounded the pavement. I mean, like I said, I'm in the Northeast, so it's like, and they were from Connecticut.
Okay,
not a stretch, but like, I saw them like probably five times in 1 year or something. But yeah, it's cool. Like I love looking at thanks lists, which it's something you do lose with a Spotify I'm seeing Max and Gloria Cavalera, because you guys also did stuff with Soulfly, right?
Yeah, we did a lot of stuff with them. Yeah. And I mean, that family's been so amazing, like, to us. Their son Dana, who unfortunately passed, he got our demo tape from Chino, along like our very first demo tape. Chino gave it to him, and then he gave it to Max, and then Max was like, he became a Will Haven fan after that demo tape. And ever since that demo tape, like, Max has been championing us forever, you know, putting our name in magazines. He put our header, Will Haven sticker on one of his guitars that we would play live. And then Soulfly took us on numerous tours. And then, you know, Grady did the song with Chino and the song Pain on the Soulfly record. And so that family's always looked after us, you know. They've been amazing people to us.
And they're still, know? They're another one still at it. And I see.
Still going, yeah. Actually,
we bands.
We saw Max two nights ago. He was in Sacramento playing. So
go ahead crazy. And die.
Yeah, yeah.
I heard those were really fun shows. And I think
his
son plays
guitar. Igor plays guitar, yeah.
And then his other son plays drums for Soulfly.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's a talented family. But it's awesome that he's able to like do that with his kids. That's got to be so rad.
Yeah, my kids don't want anything to do with anything. It is. So it's and I see here also Alex Newport, which I love Fudge Tunnel. So
yeah, that's, I would say Fudge Tunnel was probably the number one influence on Will Haven back when we started.
I can hear it.
Yeah, like that band. I saw him live in San Jose, and I was front row, you know, and I just became a huge fan. And then the crazy thing was that I think right around this time that we were doing WHVN, we got a call to do the Bad Brains tribute record. And so I don't even know how it happened, but somehow we got hooked up with Alex, and we went in and recorded that song, that Bad Brain song with Alex Newport. And I was kind of starstruck the whole session. So I was tripping out, but that was like really cool, you know, to work with like the one guy that probably started my musical career, basically Will Haven, was because of Alex, you know? So, and he's such a rad dude too. So it was nice to like know that he's such a rad guy on top of just being a huge influence on me. But yeah, that was pretty cool. That was another like milestone in my life that I can look back on.
And I think he still produces. He's like out in the desert, right?
Yeah, he's still doing stuff. Yeah, I haven't talked to him in a while, but I see his name pop up all the time, still working on projects. Yeah. So yeah.
So
he's a badass.
We already kind of touched on the touring that you did, you know, as a result of this record. And of course, you know, we talked about the layout and how it all ties together. And I can't believe now, I'm like, how did I not think that it was like call letters for radio? But it all makes sense. So, and the good news is you guys, we got your number. I think you're like one something. So the rate we're going, it'll be a year before we get to another Will Haven. Yeah, Carpe Diem. Because somebody had Carpe Diem questions, but I was like, we'll save that. We got to save something. So one of the things we do when we're wrapping up is we do a thing called Hot Tracks. Whoever's on the interview picks their favorite song, their hot track, if you will. It can be, you know, for us, it's just easy because we're just the listener. We don't necessarily have like an attachment. For you, it could be, you know, for any number of reasons, favorite to play live, favorite memory of recording, writing, whatever. So I'll go first because nobody cares about mine. and I had to go, even though I know it's not named after this, I'm sure you've heard it, I had to go with Jaworski because I'm from Philly. And I thought of Ron Jaworski, Philadelphia Eagles. But it has like, I don't know if that's the one you're referring to as the punk song.
Yeah.
It totally like, it was like, it's cool because it like sticks out on the record.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just kind of like a ripper.
Yeah. And that was actually named after Jeff, our friend Jeff Jaworski, who played in, well, there's a couple of facts on that record, but Jaworski sang for Will Haven when Grady kind of went hiatus for us for a little bit. But Jeff's been an old friend of mine forever. And he was in a band called Red Tape and they got signed to Roadrunner. But Red Tape was around when we, I think they just started right when we were recording WHVN, and they were just like, they were like punk rock, kind of old school Bad Brains punk rock stuff, like Rock of Light stuff. And so
they
were, I wanted
to do something on Roadrunner.
Yeah, I think they had one of the records is on Roadrunner.
I'm looking them up.
Yeah. So they weren't around. I mean, they put one record on River and then they disbanded a little after that. But so I kind of wrote the song as a dedication to Jeff and his band Red Tape. And he actually sings on the song as well. And then I actually played drums on that song too, which was a blast.
Oh, they had stuff on New Age too, it looks like.
Yeah. New Age. Yeah.
Okay. That's cool. Oh, you learned something new. See, that's why I enjoy doing this, because I'm always learning something. Yeah, the Roadrunner one was the album called Radioactivist.
Yeah.
Neat. I'll have to check that out. Man. I mean, yeah, I love Bad Brains.
It's funny because like after that, we named that song Jaworski, and then the song after, I think, is Lopez, and I named that after Sean Lopez. So we actually named a lot of the songs after our friends.
I love that though. Like, yeah. You know, it like you said, it's a tight knit. You guys are a tight knit group, and it's
yeah, and we it's still something are.
That gets yeah, immortalized, still... you know, for
yeah,
for time.
Yeah, so we have a pretty special scene here. Yeah.
How about you? What's your hot track?
I mean, I always love Fresno. I just love playing it live. I loved when I wrote it in the studio. It just came together really cool. And live, it sounds, it's always been one of our hits live. Probably like a shot in the dark would be Muse. That just because I think that's a cool, different song for us. You know, it was more straightforward. I love the chorus on it. And I remember writing that song, and then we played it on the Deftones tour in 98, on the El Diablo tour. We just did it at soundcheck one time just to see if we could pull it off. And I remember playing it at soundcheck and having Frank and Abe from Deftones like watching us. And then as soon as we got done with the song, like Frank's like, "That's a pretty good song, man." I was like, "Oh, thank you." So I was like, "All right, we're doing something good." But that was the first time we
pocket.
Yeah. So that was the first time we'd ever played it. And then we went and recorded on WHVN. So it's always been kind of like a cool song for me. Like, it's one of the first songs I wrote for the record. And it was just kind of just stuck around.
I mean, to get that Deftones seal of approval.
Yeah. It definitely helps.
Most of us would love to have, for sure.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, thanks so much for chatting. And like we said, this isn't, sometimes they're bittersweet because we're like, this is the only Rev record, but you're going to have to hear from us again, whether you like it or not.
I'm a Rev fan till the day I die. I love Revelation. I love everything about them. And they're still a part of my family. You know, I still talk to Jordan, you know, occasionally, and I'll always be supportive of Revelation and Jordan and anything they do. So, I mean, I love them to death. So I'm always here to chat Rev stuff.
And is there anything you wanted to add for anybody listening? I know you guys, you do have a new-ish album that came out last year that I've been meaning to check out. Actually, I was going to say it got some critical acclaim. I'm a loyal reader of Decibel magazine, which is based out of Philly. Mm-hmm. And the record was, it's called 7, but it's a Roman numeral 7, was in their top 40 for last year.
Yeah.
Best of number 29.
Yeah. It was, I mean, that record was a lot of fun to make. Of course, we kind of had to write it over COVID, which took a long time, but I love that record. It's probably up there as one of my favorite records we've ever done. Turned out amazing, and we've been touring quite a bit on it lately, which has been awesome. We're already writing new songs for another record, so you know, it's almost old hat now, but yeah, it turned out great. I love it. The thing about this band is like, I think kind of what we were going back to before, it's like I kind of taught myself how to play guitar. So like El Diablo and even WHVM was all kind of new for me. I didn't really know what I was doing. But now that I'm older and I've been doing it for so long, like now songs are starting to like come together for me, and I know how to kind of write. So the band keeps getting better and better. And so I'm excited about our new record, you know, see kind of what we do next time. So it's been fun. You know, I'm just happy to still be playing music and still playing with my best friends. And it's been crazy.
Yeah,
crazy little ride.
We're fans of music, right? Both of us. To have a band that lasted, that really, I mean, I was looking like you guys went on, I guess, a hiatus, but not, I mean, it wasn't like a hiatus of like 30 years where you came back. You know, it was like a little bit, like you said, you had Jeff Jaworski came in and sang for a little when you got back together. But you could have been pretty steadily playing.
Mm-hmm.
And to still have your seventh album be like making a best of list out of a year where, frankly, there was a lot of solid stuff last year in the hardcore metal punk world. It was a, you know, I think because, like you said, all these bands that were writing over COVID, there was this like,
everything dropped.
Stuff.
Yep.
I mean, that's impressive to be like, and again, not even like you're number 40, like you're, you know, like I've checked out stuff because of seeing lists like that. Like I just, mm-hmm. I'm old school like that. Like a friend may tell me to check something out and I might or may not, but like, I see like, I'm going to check this out. So. And it's cool when you're playing out here. You're going to be playing next month, the festival here, the Decibel Beer and Metal Fest.
Yeah, we're doing a couple. We're playing in Baltimore at Auto Bar, and then we're playing the Decibel Fest in Philly, and then we're doing hopefully St. Vitus if it's open. If not, then we'll have to move it somewhere else. But in Brooklyn, so yeah, we're still getting out. We're still playing. Like, I mean, these guys in my band have been my best friends my whole life. So there's nothing else we're gonna do. You know, it's like. Music is our life, and I think the reason we are still together is because these are my best friends. You know, even outside the band, I still hang out with these guys all the time. So, you know, I think we're fortunate to have that. You know, we're a family, and we just love playing music. We love going on tour with each other and playing. And so, it's funny because I get people coming to me all the time, like, I just want to thank you for still sticking it out and being around, and it's so cool. You guys are still doing it. You know, that's so cool. And I'm like, oh, we're just having fun. You know, we're just playing, but. People respect that. And I think especially with Seven, it made that record so much better is because people have known us for 30 years, and usually bands around for 30 years, they kind of just dissolve or just kind of maybe get worse over time, you know, but like we're coming out stronger than ever. And people are like, hey, these guys have been doing it forever and they're still putting out great music. So, you know, I mean, I say the same with the Deftones. It's like, they've been around for 30 years and they're still putting out great music and you're still excited when you hear something coming out, you know? So, we're kind of in the same boat, you know, we're still trudging along and still trying to create better stuff than we did in the past. So it's been fun. It's been a blast.
Yeah. I mean, I'm excited to, I'll get to see you guys live.
Are you coming out?
I will be at both days of the fest.
Oh, awesome. Right on. Yeah, cool. I'll come up and say hi for sure.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
You guys, I forget if you're the first or second night, but it doesn't matter. I'm at both. So.
We're Saturday. So I guess it'll be the second night.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It's the perfect fest because, I feel like I heard even Albert, the Decibel editor in chief say like, I hate to say it, but it's like kind of catered towards us older crowds. Like it's a 2-day fest, but it's like, it doesn't start at like noon like some of them do, and you know it's mm-hmm. like, and it's only 2 days, it's not 3, 4, 5, which, you know, again, for us older guys, I think it's like the perfect amount of time, and the lineup is stacked,
it's
very diverse, so it'll be a fun time. But yeah, love to say hi and You know, I don't drink beer, but I'll have a Liquid Death. And, you know, that's why I was like, well, I don't have to buy the beer pass, which is nice. I was
supposedly they were going to, they're talking about doing a Willhaven beer for that show. And I was like, that's, we've never had a beer. Like, it's one thing we've never had is like a beer with our name on it. So that'd be kind of cool if that actually comes.
And again, I'm not, I don't drink, but I think it's cool. Like they have all these breweries that'll make like themed beer, like based on the bands. We have a brewery here in Philly called Yards. And actually some friends of mine from high school, like, work there and have been into metal again since they were kids. So it's like, and they're now like creating these different brews for bands. So it's cool.
That's awesome. Yeah, that's awesome. I love seeing that. Yeah, I mean, seeing the Deftones beer at my local store is pretty cool, you know, stuff like that. Like, that's really cool.
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't be able to, I mean, they're making it and there's all these, I saw something, one of them was announced and they're talking about all the flavors and whatnot. I'm like, I can barely make toast. So, all right, man. Well, seriously, it was an absolute pleasure. We'll be in touch and I hope to see you in real life. And gosh, it's like less than a month from today now. So
yeah, I think Albert emailed me yesterday. It's probably 2 days ago. I think he's about said it was a month away. So yeah, I'm close.
Awesome.
But yeah, but thank you, man. Thanks for taking the time to chat and catching up with William. That's really cool. Appreciate it.
Take it easy. Yeah. Nice to meet you.
Yeah, I'll see you soon.
Bye-bye.
All right, bye.
What's up, y'all? This is Javier. And I just wanted to take a quick second to inform all of you wonderful listeners that you can support us every month on Patreon. And it helps, of course. It's not why we do this, but it's great. And I wanted to read a brief list of our top tier patrons, our most loyal friends and fans. And anyway, here it goes. Ange, Billy Tunnell, Brandon Gavel, Brian Skiffington, Brooklyn, Chad Keplinger, David Palmer, Dirk Focused, Jeremy Holohan, John Cowell, Nate of Head to Wall Fame, Ryan Walker, Tad Payton, Tim Shear, Tyler of the Life and Death Brigade, and Siren Records. Now, if you are interested at all in becoming a patron of any level, head over to whereitwentpodcast.com. There's lots of info there. But you know what? Either way, we'll see y'all next episode. Thanks for tuning in and hanging out and listening to us. And if you were a patron, you would be about to listen to like another 45 minutes of the three of us talking about hardcore and this record and all manner of things. So, hey, maybe someday you'll be there. Thanks, Bidepo.